This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I am Mira Sivisodi. Dr. John Ben Loy, US licensed marriage and family therapist, in the studio with us. Today we have an interesting topic, and please get involved because it affects every one of us. We're discussing birth order and personalities, the oldest, the middle, and the youngest child, and you know whether or not there is a birth order theory. I mean, when I was reading, it's all sorts of theories all over the place. I'm even wondering if this is going to be relevant or useful or not. Dr. John Ben, what do you think?
I'm very curious about why people are so interested in it.
Definitely, right? There's so much of interest
in it. It's almost like a natural curiosity.
Yeah, it's like an astrologer telling you
exactly,
stuff.
Exactly, right.
But why? So,
well, the first question we have to ask is, what number child are you, Mira?
I am the eldest.
You are the eldest.
I know.
Wow.
Don't quote that Australian psychiatrist. The Austrian psychiatrist. I know what he said.
What did he say? Let's get into that. This is going to be a really good show.
And we're going to be fair to, you know, we're going to be fair and square. We're going to get to you being the youngest as well.
I'm the youngest?
I think you are. I think you've mentioned it before. That explains your character a lot, actually. Well, an Austrian psychiatrist, I apologize, in the 1920s,
yes,
traced back more than 100 years. He said the oldest child was privileged, yet neurotic and burdened by responsibility. Now, don't you just feel sorry for me?
Sure, of course I do. I feel sorry for everybody who believes that they're suffering
from something.
Yes.
And said by an Austrian psychiatrist more than 100 years ago. Who really cares, actually?
That's Alfred Adler you're talking about.
Know.
Of course we care.
Why?
Because he's brilliant.
Why is he brilliant?
Austrian German psychologists. He's one of the early proponents of psychology. You know, he's a psychiatrist, but thinking, understanding human behavior. So a lot of these early researchers, early theorists, you know, have to come up with something on which then we study and we continue to refine. And today, we will have an explanation of how to help you. And that's what this show will be all about.
And you're the youngest child? The one who
is... I am actually not the youngest.
Really? So which number are you?
So it's a bit complicated.
Always complicated.
As usual. Mm. It has to be. I am the third of three close brothers in age. And then a fourth one came along. And then there was a fifth one that came along with big gaps.
Okay. But
Seven. I was seven when my next youngest sibling came along.
Okay, so 7 years apart from number three.
But only
and number
two
four.
And a half between the first three. Mm-hmm. So in a way, I was the baby for 7 years. Now, is that significant enough?
I don't know. So what does that mean? I mean, frankly, it's never really mattered to me. But there would be
That's
some...
That's because you were number one, right?
Yes,
so it didn't really matter to you.
Self-centered, privileged, neurotic... burdened by responsibility. I had no time to notice these things. But really, in your line of work, how do you apply these theories?
Very lightly. Now, I think to begin with, I've got a couple of hats, right? So one hat is that of a therapist, but I also have another hat, which I don't wear so often these days, and that is a researcher. So today I have both hats on. Mm-hmm. So as the researcher, I am very... cautious about common sense type stereotypes, you know, such as birth order theory. But as a clinician, I work with people's perceptions, I work with people's ideas and what matters to them to help them to move towards change. So in terms of a researcher, unfortunately, birth order theory doesn't hold much water.
That's what I thought. You didn't have any, you know, you didn't have to say it. I knew that because, first of all, I don't like this whole idea of labeling. And what we're looking at today is very much your personality and, worst of all, looking at intelligence
based
on birth order.
I know.
How damaging is that?
I know. With
because,
the firstborn.
Being the smartest.
Like yours, exactly.
Exactly. And then the number three. Not sure what's going on there.
Now, there's a difference when you compare within the family and then between families, right?
Of course. And so what was your growing up years like? And based on the theories that you understand, yeah. I mean, is there, yeah. What do you observe? And do you apply it in the family setting?
Well, when I was growing up, I would say very clearly I was subjected to the stereotypes of number one, number two, number three, that sort of thing. Because the fourth sibling, when he came along, by the time it was any significant impact, I was already a teenager, right? So the others were in university and moving on. So I was really seen as the baby in my family. And I think it did affect me and how I perceived myself, especially preparing for today's show and reading about it and thinking about my own experiences and then pitting that against research. What does it all mean? Mm-hmm. So I had a lot of new questions, actually, from today's topic.
What did you take away from all the work that you did?
The work I did in terms of research
for
or just
yourself?
Well, a simple one, I will say this. It was actually somewhere in my 30s, okay, in my 30s that my brother said to me, "You have finally grown up." He actually said that. Mm-hmm. That would be number one who said that.
Okay.
Right? To which I thought to myself, oh, part of me said, that's great. Yeah, finally grown up. The other part of me said, that's complete nonsense. I've been grown up for a long time. You know, but then there's this really strong perception that you are the baby. So therefore. And so I think there is something to the myth, if you will, or the stereotypes that we hold in families that could contribute to some kind of perception, some kind of self-stereotyping even.
Okay, but what about within amongst your siblings, the mm-hmm. other two above you?
Yes.
How was your relationship with them? And did that have anything to do with this stereotyping when it comes to birth?
Completely.
Really?
I mean, three boys, close in age, you know, the first one, you know, Penang Free School, right?
Okay.
You know, and then the second one's kind of lost and sort of rebellious, but highly loyal, if you will. And then the third one's kind of free-spirited, do whatever he wants, you know, is the favorite one, spoiled.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now.
They must have hated you.
Maybe. Maybe.
Spoiled.
Maybe. But the thing is, and I had other friends who were of the same configuration, you know, mm-hmm. three boys or one girl to two boys, that sort of thing. And I always kind of compared and tried to look for the patterns. What I think is because of the way we talk about it, then we perpetuate that and we actually can impact the children in terms of how they think of themselves. And we can go into that more in detail later.
Okay. What about intelligence?
Apparently, I don't think I can fight the studies. There is a difference.
Really?
Yes, cross-sectionally, and that means studying in one point in time, but it's quite marginal. We're only looking at about 1 to 1.5 points, IQ points, for each year of difference between siblings. And here's a really interesting
one. But do we know the science behind it, why this happens?
I think people have theories, but when you're looking at, you know, thousands and thousands of core, it's just kind of like, you know, pull some theory off and see if you can potentially explain it. I'm not reducing it down to any one thing, but there are lots of ideas, mm-hmm. basically, right? So basically, what the statistics are showing us is that if you randomly picked a firstborn from any population, right, the chances of that firstborn being smarter than another randomly picked secondborn is 52%.
Wow.
Yeah, so you, if I randomly picked you and I randomly picked another secondborn, you have 52% more chance of being more intelligent than the secondborn.
Someone of the same age?
That's important. Mm. So we need to look at that too. Research studies have been trying to control for variables such as age cohort, size of family, et cetera, et cetera. I won't go into the details of all of that. But then conversely, then a randomly picked second born would have about 48% chance of being smarter than you, assuming you're randomly picked, right?
Uh-huh.
So that's kind of how you can think about it, right? Rather than think, oh, you're firstborn, you must be smart. And we're really only talking about 1.5 points on IQ, mm-hmm. right? You know, someone with an IQ, there was a quote that said that if you're smart and how does it go? Let me see. IQ is only weakly related to achievement among people who are smart enough to become scientists. So research has shown, for example, that a scientist who has an IQ of 130 is just as likely to win a Nobel Prize as a scientist whose IQ is 180. So 1 or 1.5 points difference in IQ, is that really practically significant? And is IQ the only measure of intelligence? Or are we looking at multiple kinds of intelligences?
Exactly. What about socioeconomic status? Does that make a difference? People who are more affluent, children coming from more affluent families, you know, does that have an influence compared to those? The firstborn from an affluent family and the firstborn from not an affluent family?
There are findings, and then there are counter findings and counter arguments. So it's really hard, you know, because there are just so many ways to study something, right? So there are some findings that the larger the family, the lower the IQ or the intelligence scores, say for a third born. Mm-hmm. A third born in a three children family, randomly picked, will have lower IQ score compared to a higher IQ score, smaller family, right? So a third born, three children, higher IQ score compared to a third born out of eight children.
Okay.
So the larger the family, the tendency for lower intelligence scores.
Okay, I'm also thinking of parental involvement throughout the families. With one family with more, say for an example, one parent stays at home and is more invested in terms of nurturing and bringing up the children, as opposed to one that doesn't. There possibly may be a difference. I don't know. I'm just thinking. We can come back and talk about that up next. So we're discussing birth order theories here, whether you're the eldest child, the middle or the youngest child. Trying to, see if there is any relationship between birth order and personality, intelligence. Don't really like talking about it because I don't like labeling people. But then we'll have that discussion anyway because Dr. John Ben Loy is in the studio with us.
And I want to find out your experiences of being a firstborn.
It's all wonderful. It's all wonderful. Give us a call. The number is 03-77-109-000. Tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. In our Health and Living segment, Dr. John Ben Loy, U.S. licensed marriage and family therapist, we are discussing birth order theories. So especially in relation to personality, intelligence, different socioeconomic status and whether or not that has an impact on how you develop as a child and into adulthood, the difference between siblings, the age difference. You know, Dr. John Ben Loy sharing his experience being the third child. And then there's a big age gap between number four and number five.
That's right.
So you pretty much spent most of your years with the siblings just who were older to you. So what was that journey like growing up as a third child?
Well, because we were three boys, so I distinctly remember not being able to do the things that they did. Yeah, I just remember struggling to be able to climb the monkey bars, if you will. We had swings. So my second brother was very active, perhaps maybe even hyperactive. And he would swing and he would be sort of like a monkey. And we had other cousins around who were always enamored by his, physical abilities.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so I tried it. I could never do some of the things he did, right? So in a sense, I can remember feeling inferior compared to him. You know, and then my eldest brother was, of course, 6 years older than me, and he could read books that I could hardly carry. I remember looking at one of his, because he was English medium at the time, and I remember looking at one of his books, I think it was Form 1 or Form 2, and just sort of enamored, wow, how can anybody read so many words, and so it's always you're looking up to your elder siblings.
Did that affect your confidence?
I think it could have, except that the stereotype that I received was I was the lazy, naughty, really smart guy.
Okay.
Yeah. So I could rise to my own logic, and I could put up a pretty good argument myself. But it did. It made me wonder if I was good enough. So it certainly had an influence.
We were talking about parental involvement just now, and mm-hmm. as I was saying, some people spend a lot more time with the children in their formative years, as opposed to, you know, some have to go out and work and, you know, put food on the table. But for those who spend a lot more time talking, reading, you know, that sort of thing, mm-hmm. do you think that it is, hence this whole birth disorder thing is not
Did you know
accurate?
You said birth disorder?
Sorry, yes. That's because I'm always talking about disease.
Some kind of a
I'm sorry.
Freudian slip.
Birth, yes.
We'll work with that, birth disorder.
Birth order, I yes. apologize. So do you think that this theory doesn't quite apply? Because, you know, if you have more guidance and spent a lot more time with parents in your formative years, mm-hmm. Does that make a difference? Or does it not make a difference at all when it comes to intelligence and personality? Birth order.
Depends on how we define things now, because psychologists have a way of defining things, right? So when you talk about, does, say, parenting of different styles or different magnitude have an impact on the intelligence and the personality of a child, we need to talk about, is it innate or developmental? So personality, usually we're talking about something that's more innate, that's stable over time. And then intelligence is also usually considered, you know, your biological intelligence or your innate intelligence.
Okay.
Now, what you are born with, that's your genes. Hardly anyone these days, any scholar these days, looks only at nature and not nurture. It is interactional. So we all agree on that pretty much. Anybody who doesn't is going to very quickly be shot out of the water.
Mm-hmm.
So the nurturing makes a huge difference. And research shows that again and again, how you nurture your children, what you say to them, the exposure to early reading may not be necessary now with new studies showing up, coming up. Particularly in the Northern European countries,
mm-hmm.
you know, where they do not emphasize scholastic
That's
learning
right.
at very early ages.
Yes,
now.
I think they're getting rid of
that is yet to be seen. I'm very interested in what that's all that's going to pan out mm-hmm. to. But yeah, you know, I think the attachment, secure attachment that you help form your children. With I didn't really say that right, but if you continue to use good parenting styles to nurture secure attachment within your child, it can make a lot of difference. So when it comes back to birth order, if we have, can I throw in now fixed mindset? That's mm-hmm. another concept, right? Fixed versus growth mindset. If we have a fixed mindset to birth order, you are number one. You should do this. You should do that. It's very fixed. Right, you're born this way, you're born number one, so therefore you must do this or you must do that. Then if the number one happens to be similar and able, then that number, it's kind of like fuel and fire. Boom! It can really spark that. But if number one cannot, then it could be negative for the child.
Mm-hmm.
Because why am I number one but I'm not as successful as number two?
Yep.
Right? Why can't I be as smart as number two? Right, that could be detrimental.
And parenting styles. So knowing this, do we alter our parenting styles to cater to the children based on their birth order?
Yeah, that's a good question.
With the number one, we don't know because you just go all out.
That's right.
You know, and that's why we're, you know, the way we are.
Yeah, mm. I was thinking
Privileged.
About this.
Neurotic.
You number ones. You have to take care of us number threes. You realize that, right?
Yes.
The burden's on you, Mira, to take care of.
So what does this mean, that you're less intelligent? That's what the theory is saying, that you are less intelligent.
Yes, by one IQ point, what does that mean?
Sorry, we're talking about parenting styles.
Yes, yeah. Parenting styles.
So should we keep this at the back of our minds when it comes to parenting?
I think what it can do is if we have in the back of our minds, like really at the back of our minds, not in the front, that birth order might have some influence on our kids, we can work hard to avoid its negative effects. So, for instance, trying to make work more fair around the house for the kids, number one, two, and three, everybody contributes, right? I'm trying to think back to when my kids were younger. I don't think I ever said you're number one to my daughter. I think I said things more like you're bigger, okay? You're taller, you're stronger. And so, Didi, younger brother, is not as strong, etc. So you must give way to the weaker. Something to that extent.
Only because he's physically smaller.
Only physically smaller. And I would remind her, I think, one day, your little brother is going to be much bigger than you.
Exactly.
So it's kind of more general values rather than which order you were born in.
Okay, but then again, when you talk about parenting styles, doesn't it happen quite naturally? I mean, I remember, as we do mollycoddle our first child a lot more because, you know,
they're special. They're number one. They're the first.
And you're finding your way around being a parent, right?
Yeah.
So you're paranoid, you are, you know, extra careful and all of that. Then the second one comes along.
Yes.
And you really don't have a lot of time.
Yes.
Because you now have two children to deal with.
That's
so the
right.
way you are now parenting this second child is very different.
That's right.
So it happens almost by default.
Generally speaking, it can. That's right. And so being aware of that, not so much birth order, but the situation that comes with birth order. You know the difference? Because now I'm busier. I have another toddler running around.
So you have no time to fuss and mollycoddle and do all of
that. That's right.
But that affects the development of the second child.
That's right. So having birth order at the back of your mind will help you to counteract its negative effects. Wow, I can quote myself. I'm definitely tweeting that one.
Okay, tweet. Mister, thank God he wasn't the firstborn. Can you imagine?
Boy.
I know.
Yeah, I think what I could have done, like my big brother.
So.
The dato, right? What am I? Ooh, just a doctor.
I sense sibling rivalry. Would I be right?
No.
No, you're
lying. I actually get along really well with my eldest brother.
Okay, we'll come back and talk about sibling rivalry.
He's a super nice guy.
I'm sure
he really is.
He is. Yeah, that's probably because he's listening right now. We have a question here.
Yes.
Are the effects the same for fostered or adopted children?
Yeah, we don't know that. I don't know that. I bet you if I went to go online and research it, I'm not going to find much. Because I researched a very obvious one that is multiple intelligences and birth order. Couldn't find anything. So no one has taken Howard Gardner's work and apply birth order to it. You know, different types of intelligence
and birth
order.
Who's Howard Gardner again?
He is the psychologist that came up with the idea of multiple intelligences.
Okay.
That you have, you know, not just your IQ, but you can have musical intelligence or visual spatial intelligence, sort of sports intelligence, et cetera.
Okay. Yeah. So we can't seem to figure out.
Yeah, that. I still want to deal with that question, though. Again, even with fostered children, right? Let's say you're fostering two siblings, right? You want to pay attention to the same possible effects that come with different orders.
Yep.
Yeah.
I would think so anyway. Yeah. But, you know, it's left to be seen. So let's talk about sibling rivalry. I did sense some of it coming through just now, but how did you feel?
That's because you just want to charge in and help solve it all.
No, I can't be bothered, actually. You're so full of yourself. I don't care.
You're number one.
Yes.
I'm calling out the number one in you.
I am coming. I have not denied. I'm privileged. I am neurotic. And I am burdened with responsibility.
I don't think you're neurotic. That's
how would
let's,
you know?
Let's leave that to the clinic, the psychiatrists, okay. Until you've seen them
right.
For an evaluation.
Philip George perhaps might be able to say. But sibling rivalry.
Yes.
Did you experience any of that?
Absolutely.
Really?
Yeah.
Not with the eldest brother?
No, with the second one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why?
And we've talked about that. Why? Because I think he had a diagnosable mental illness that we didn't know about back in the 70s.
Are you serious?
Seriously. Seriously.
Okay.
So he's passed away. He passed at a very young age of 38 in a car accident. And the year in which he died, actually is less than a year. I was in the U.S. I was or Canada. I was studying. You know, I never stopped studying. And I remember coming back for a visit, and I gave him the card. Oh yes, I was doing a master's in counseling at the time. I gave him the card of a psychiatrist to go for a diagnosis to ascertain whether he has adult version of ADHD, mm-hmm. And he had a lot of trouble reading. And he would also shake his legs a lot at night, which some people say is sort of comorbid with ADHD. I'm not sure about that, but I've heard it. So he had trouble focusing. He couldn't really read. Always troubled him. Yeah. So, and I think he also had other allergies as well. Mm-hmm. So because I remember he's always sort of like all his life, right? So
almost like a nervous cough.
Angry. He was very angry. He struggled with anger, right? And so as I grew up and I learned more about counseling and mental health, I started realizing, I think he might be suffering from all these things. Looks like it makes sense. So I gave him the number of a psychiatrist. Whether he actually went and got it checked out or not, I don't know, but he left us less than a year after that.
Okay.
So my experience with him was very negative growing up. And it's one of the reasons why, actually, I went into the mental health field. You know, so many of us go in to try to figure ourselves out. Those of us who are not damaged enough, right, become those who can help others, But we have enough damage that we can really relate to it and be able to empathize with others.
Okay. So has that affected you in do you think this had anything to do with birth order or... It's just his personality.
Yeah, that's a really good question, because what about the circumstances of our birth order? Now, remember thinking that eldest brother is, he can do everything, that sort of thing. He was the sort of very physical one. He was already challenged, I guess, with attention and with temper. And I was... In a strange way, there was this sense that I was my mom's favorite. That's kind of the label that I got. Not that my mom favored me, but that I was mama's boy. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like more like my doing than my mother's doing.
Right.
Always clingy to mom. Right. I remember thinking things like, he's angry at me because I get my mother more. Because if he ever bullied me, guess whose name is shouted? It's Ma.
Of course.
And then she would come with a, I don't even know what you call it. It's Dina.
The number.
What do you call that? The cane.
The rotan.
The rotan. There you go. The light one,
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, no. Back then it was a feather duster. She would come running with a feather duster and he would run away.
Oh, my goodness. You just gave away both our age. Nobody uses a feather duster, but
What is that? What is a feather duster?
But I totally relate to the feather
duster.
That's
right.
It had two functions, right?
That's
dust
right.
And hit at the
That's
same
right.
time. But do you think that relationship affected family dynamics?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I talk sometimes when it's relevant, I do tell people, especially clinically, when they have children that are close in age and there is some kind of conflict, I tell parents, do something, right? Don't just let it be. In a sense, growing up, when I think back, I felt like there was not enough intervention. I don't fault my parents for it. They did their best. But me growing as a father, I was very, very conscious to make sure that my two kids, and they could have become enemies, that they did not. It was very conscious on my part. And my favorite phrase was, you only have one brother. You only have one sister. If anything happens to me, you know, you only have each other.
But they're young. Yeah. This happens. Oh, no, squabbles no.
This could
and
be
all
like,
of that.
No, this could be like 10, you know.
Yeah, well, what's wrong with that? We all fought with our siblings. And
you want to look at the power dynamics, right? You want to look at, because as an adult, when you're looking at two children squabbling, it feels like nothing to you because you're looking at it from the lens of an adult. Now, imagine two adults squabbling. Suddenly it seems much more serious, mm-hmm. right? So bring it down to their world and imagine what it feels like to them. It's the whole world. You taking my toy without my permission and me can't get it back is a huge battle, right? It's just like somebody just wants to take my job away from me.
Really? I think it's because you've been scarred as a child.
No.
And so you feel it, but I just look at it as something, it's just growing up.
Yeah. So that's what we do, right? We put away, if it doesn't hurt you enough, you can say that and you can move on. And that's great. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, the majority of the population does that. But when it is trauma, I've treated way too many cases of trauma that has to do with family conflict.
In adulthood.
Yeah.
As in it persists from childhood.
50-year-old people, you know, bullied by my brother, bullied by my sister. Oh, yeah. And then when they can't get together as families, it comes from way, way back there, mm-hmm. right? And then you have families whereby I tell my sister everything.
Yeah,
you
know,
my brother is always there for me. Right? That's different.
Yes,
yeah.
If only every family.
Yeah,
my mom
right.
would say, "Oh, you know, the siblings' horoscopes don't match."
Okay. Yeah, so blame it on the stars,
they were
right?
Born. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Blame it on the stars, but you know, but it's quite. You start to wonder why is it in some families they get along really well, and in some they just don't.
Yeah, I don't ask that question so much. I figure out a way to make it better. Because it's kind of like, oh, why do some people die eating this food and some people don't? And you kind of sit there and research it. No, I'm going to try to make sure that food doesn't kill someone. Mm-hmm. So, I know interventions work, right? My siblings, I'm glad to say, are really, really best friends today.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And what is the worst that you've ever seen? Extreme examples of sibling problems playing out in a very negative context?
How clinical do you want to get?
No, just examples.
We're talking about, you know,
siblings fighting over family inheritance, for an example. Does that have anything to do with birth order and you know, the sibling rivalry and all of that?
It could. So I work with large families as well, as I work with family-owned businesses, right? And you begin to see it when it's passing down to the second generation. And here I'm talking the second generation could be in their 50s, okay, or 60s even. And the lack of bonding from early years, they will tell you that. You know, we were from sometimes, you know, different families, one father, right? These are aged families. Mm-hmm. So that was quite common back then. We didn't grow up together. We grew up separately. We don't really have much to talk about. But then we all are part of this thing called the business, the family business, and we have to get along. And it becomes a real problem later on when we can't, because we have nothing in common. And not only that, if there are injuries along the way, these injuries are encoded in your memory as traumatic, small-t trauma, not necessarily big-t trauma. And then they just kind of like, you know, rocks in the way of the path to really healthy relating and giving in and discussing. Yeah, no room. So sometimes I just go in to begin to get them to be able to talk to each other. And it goes all the way back to when I was 7 years old.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
So again, not all families.
Okay.
Those who can sweep it under the carpet and move on and be happy and
but
talk
for how
and
long?
Eat.
But for how long, right?
Yeah, well, it depends.
All right. When we come back, we'll find out more about this, the single child and how that works out in terms there is no birth order. It's only one child. How does that, in this context of what we're talking about, whether or not there is something to discuss. That's coming up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I am Meera Sivasodhi, Dr. John Ben Loy, US licensed marriage and family therapist in the studio, talking to us about birth order, personalities, intelligence, that sort of thing. We've gone into this discussion quite a bit using Dr. John Ben as an example himself, being the third in family of five, did
yes.
you say? Yeah. And you know, what about the single child? What is the dynamics of single child families? How does being an only child sort of mold that person's personality?
Yeah, I actually don't know. I only have anecdotes, my own experiences. Maybe someone can call in and share what what it's like to be a single child. But generally speaking, if the parents are attentive and there, they probably grew up being well-adjusted people. The question I have is how well have they learned to share? That's the question. If you're a single child and you've had everything, you're sort of used to your not kind of sharing, where have you learned to do that?
Okay. And we'll forget about the single child then. Coming back to the question of why on earth this birth order theory resonates so much with people when, you know, scientifically it's still questionable as to whether or not these theories really, really apply.
Yeah.
But what do you think was so interested in it?
I think it's like astrology.
I also think so, lah.
Yes! Give me five, number one.
Really? It's like astrology. This.
Yes. Have you seen the YouTube video of this magician who gave astrological readings, very detailed ones, to everyone in the class?
No, I don't believe in this stuff, so
No.
Watch
it's an experiment. It's really good.
Okay.
Maybe I won't.
What's it called?
He's a magician. I think if you type in astrology experiment class, you'll probably find it. But it has a really interesting surprise ending to it. I won't spoil it.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, then. That's fine. So there are online questionnaires that you can take in terms of birth order and sort of tells you, you know, stuff about yourself. What is the takeaway from these questionnaires and should we even bother doing them?
You can do any questionnaire you want, but what's the purpose? Right. So it's just to find out, you know, what, I mean, you know, your experience, basically. I think it's what's more important is knowing where you are, who you are, and where you want to go, regardless of birth order, gender, race, handicap, etc. That's what's really important. Right. But then, again, coming back to that awesome quote, you know, keeping the birth order negative effects at the back of your mind so that you can protect yourself, maybe even children, your children from that, from the negative effects.
Okay, so just keep it at the back of your mind. But does it affect how or who we pick as life partners, for an example, the whole idea of birth order?
Yeah. So, hey, the last time we did personality too, we talked about the Myers-Briggs, remember?
That's right.
Yeah. So the Myers-Briggs can't be used to hire people. Did you know that?
Yes.
Yeah. So
we use something called the Belbin.
Ah, okay. Belbin is more team oriented.
Yeah.
So I asked the trainer, I said, if I can't use it, but I really want to because I just want to know who it is, you know, that I'm interviewing. He said, ask the kinds of questions that you want to know behind the personality tendencies, yeah, preferences that's suitable for this job. So in other words, whether I'm the firstborn, I want to marry a firstborn or, you know, that sort of thing. Well, what are the traits are you're looking for?
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I want to marry someone that's a good complement to me that can, you know, balance out my weaknesses, that my strengths can come into play. At the same time, you know, although our differences can attract, we'll work hard not to make our differences attack. Mm-hmm. Each other.
Okay. And today, families are getting smaller. What would you, I mean, and you and I fall in that boat. We've only got two children.
Mm-hmm.
is birth order something that we really should be concerned about or be keeping still at the back of our minds? What do you think?
I don't think we're going to be able to get away from it. It's so ingrained into our psyche to look for patterns, and birth order is one of them. And it's all around. We'll hear it. Oh, you're the number one. You know, if we don't do it, our in-laws would do it or for us, right?
I don't know about your in-laws.
Yeah.
But mine don't.
Yeah, mine don't either. But some people do.
I just lied.
Oh, did you?
It comes.
Are they listening?
Very naturally. No, they're not.
Yes, that's right.
So that's how confident I am. But
it does come very naturally.
It comes very naturally.
That's right.
Very, very naturally.
Yes.
The difference is just that I don't articulate it.
Ah, okay.
But you are guilty of it.
Yes.
Every now and again.
Yes. Yeah. So what's the best about the firstborn? What's the best about the secondborn? What's the best about the thirdborn? The best of the firstborn is the responsibility, mm-hmm. The winner, like Mira. The best of the second one is the loyalty. The best of the third one is the risk-taking and the freedom and the fun. Blend them all together and have it in you.
Mm-hmm.
Why not?
The third one, the charmer.
Yeah. Mm. Is that what I just did?
45 minutes of that. You just heard it.
And you enabled it. Thank you, number one.
Thank you for joining us, Dr. John Bendoy, U.S. licensed marriage and family therapist, talking to us about birth order on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.